where black farmers were discriminated out of their fair share. This is the divide and conquer. This is trying to activate the zero sum. And the fact that we were not able we were not able to get the minimum wage bill in there is really about the failure of a multiracial coalition to have the kind of enduring power that we need to lift the wages for all working people.
Heather McGee, we want to thank you for being with us. We're going to post part two online at democracynow.org. Author of the new book, The Sum of Us, What Racism Costs Everyone and How We Can Prosper Together. Heather McGee, the board chair of Color of Change, former president of the think tank Demos. Happy birthday to Tammy Warrenoff. Remember, wearing a mask is an act of love. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Cuando te pega fuerte, más profundo es el beat, ¿sí? Sigo bailando y escribiendo mis letras. Sigo cantando con las puertas abiertas. Atravesando por toda esta tierra. Y no hay que viajar tanto para encontrar la respuesta. Hey, no te preocupes si no te aprueban. Cuando te critiquen, tú solo di. Soy yo.
Thanks for listening to KVOO Portland, 90.7 FM in the Portland metro area and all over the world at kbu.fm.
KBOO has a number of special t-shirts we've created just for you during our month of special programming. Whether you are a metalhead, a punk rocker, a bluegrass fan, or a feminist, we have a t-shirt for you. Wear it proudly in support of KBOO Community Radio. Go to kbu.fm/t-shirts to see all the designs. All proceeds go to support the work of KBOO Community Radio.
Now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the family of Kevin Peterson Jr. has announced a lawsuit over the death of their son at the hands of Clark County law enforcement. The Oregon Bias Response Hotline has reported a 35% increase in calls during the first 2 months of 2021, and a judge in Minneapolis has decided that the trial of Officer Derek Chauvin in the shooting death of George Floyd will remain in the county. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, March 19th, 2021. I'm Nat Moon. According to a report by the Oregon Department of Justice, the Bias Response Hotline showed a dramatic increase in bias incidents during the first 2 months of 2021. In 2020, the state reported an average of 92 bias incidents per month, but the number jumped to 125 per month in January and February of this year, an increase of 35%. A hate crime, known as bias crime under Oregon law, is a crime motivated by bias against another person's race, color, disability, religion, national origin, sexual orientation, or gender identity. A bias incident is a similar hostile expression that does not need to be a federal, state, tribal, or local crime. And about two-thirds of the calls received by the hotline are classed as bias incidents. In Oregon, it appears that bias crimes and incidents aimed at Asians and Pacific Islanders are among those showing a significant increase, following a disturbing trend seen elsewhere in the country. Governor Kate Brown directly addressed this with the opening comments during her weekly coronavirus press conference.
I wanted to start out this morning by addressing the violent attack in Georgia this week and the rise in racist hate crimes across Asian communities. These hate crimes are absolutely unacceptable. They must stop. I know there's a lot of pain right now in our Asian communities and across our communities of color. I see that pain. I share your concern, anger, and disappointment that such hatred can exist. I agree with you, and I will say this. I stand with you and will do everything I can to build a more equitable and just Oregon.
And yesterday, Director Ali Yee of the Asian Pacific Network of Oregon told KATU that, quote, "We have been saying for a long time that this is wrong. We know that this is an issue that impacts in a lethal way, in a way that creates a lot of harm. We really want to figure out a way we collectively respond to it." In Multnomah County, the district attorney's office has already pursued 8 bias crimes after having had 20 all last year. And earlier this week, Multnomah County DA Mike Schmidt persuaded the court not to release Daniel Lee Hutchins on bail. Hutchins was charged with bias crime and harassment after confronting another man at a Portland Mac stop, asking if he was Chinese and then punching him in the face last December. Yesterday, the Oregon Senate proposed a resolution that would ask voters to decide if health care was a fundamental human right. The bill was passed along party lines with all Democrats in favor and all Republicans opposed, and has been forwarded to the Democrat-controlled House of Representatives. If the House passes the bill, it would be up to Oregon voters to decide if the state's constitution should be amended to make healthcare a right. If voters approve, it would then be an obligation that the state find a way to provide healthcare for every resident. Senate Majority Leader Rob Wagner said, quote, "Every Oregonian deserves access to cost-effective and clinically appropriate healthcare, and Oregon's constitution should reflect that truth." Republicans complained that the promise to ensure that all Oregonians are entitled to health care lacks financial backing and that the resolution is not an actual plan. The resolution says the health care obligation must be balanced against funding public schools and other essential public services. The League of Women Voters opposed a similar bill in 2018 due to cost, but yesterday, League President Rebecca Gladstone and healthcare specialist Bill Walsh indicated their support, saying that this year would be, quote, "pivotal for national and state healthcare reforms. It's time to continue to do our part in this effort by involving voters in the process." In response to Governor Brown's order to reopen schools, Portland Public Schools and the Teachers Union have announced an agreement to bring students back to the classroom. The agreement comes 1 year after Brown's initial closure of the state's schools at the start of the COVID pandemic in March of 2020. The process will be gradual and begin on April 1st for pre-K through first grades. Grades 2 through 5 will begin April 5th, and grades 6 through 12 will begin hybrid instruction the week of April 19th. Under the approved deal, there will be 6 feet of distance between students, which will limit the number of students who can be in physical classrooms. The CDC just issued revised recommendations reducing the distance requirement to 3 feet, but it's unknown if that will be implemented in Portland. Families who prefer to have their children finish the school year in online distance learning will have that option. In comments to Willamette Week, PPS Superintendent Guadalupe Guerrero said, quote, "We've tried to act with safety and responsibility. We've listened to the health experts, and we try to observe those guidelines that the Department of Education puts out." He went on to say that filtration and ventilation has been changed, air purifiers have been installed, and routines have been switched up to reduce the risk to students and staff. The Oregon Senate is considering several bills to reduce the likelihood of walkouts during Senate sessions. Republican senators have walked out several times over the last few years, depriving the Senate of the quorum necessary to conduct business or bring bills to a vote. In 2019 and 2020, the walkouts prevented a vote on cap and trade bills intended to reduce carbon emissions. And last month, Republicans walked out to protest the plan for vaccine rollout and the delay in reopening schools. There are currently four bills under consideration to limit walkouts. They include fining lawmakers for walkouts, disqualifying individuals who have too many legislative absences from holding office, and changing the quorum requirement to a single majority. Senate rules currently require that 20 of the 30 senators must be present to have quorum. A reduction to single majority would reduce that number to 16, ensuring that in the current Senate makeup, Democrats would be able to move forward without Republican participation. But any attempt to change the rules or impose punishment on no-shows may be doomed from the start. Republicans were no-shows at yesterday's Senate Rules Committee hearing to discuss the four bills. Democrats are concerned that an attempt to move the bills out of committee will once again cause Republicans to flee the Senate chamber and grind all legislative efforts to a halt once again. Metro has announced that it is discontinuing the practice of using prisoners to pick up trash in Portland and the rest of Clackamas, Multnomah, and Washington counties. Prior to the coronavirus pandemic, the agency paid nearly $2,000 per day to Multnomah County for four prisoners and two deputies to clean illegal dumping sites. The prisoners were paid just $1 per day. But during the pandemic shutdown, the prisoners were kept behind bars, reducing Metro's illegal dumping cleanup force by 50%. And as a result of ongoing social justice protests and political unrest, Metro officials decided late last year to stop using prison labor. Portland has been struggling with the worst sanitation crisis in years. In a statement, Marissa Madrigal, the agency's chief operating officer, admitted that it was, quote, demoralizing to leave home and see the city and place you love covered in litter. But she added that the prisoners were disproportionately people of color and said that it was, quote, problematic from a racial equity perspective. She also discussed the regional government's plans to triple the size of the program's workforce in the coming fiscal year. Currently, with only a pair of two-person work crews patrolling the region since last March, Metro takes an average of 38 business days to respond to an illegal dumping report, up from 3 days a year ago. Yesterday, the family of Kevin Peterson Jr. announced their plan to sue over the death of their son at the hands of the Clark County Police. The 21-year-old died during a drug bust on October 29th, in which officers had apparently arranged to buy Xanax via Snapchat. The incident occurred just north of Vancouver, Washington, when Peterson fled an arrest attempt. He was pursued on foot by two detectives and a sheriff's deputy who fired 34 shots, hitting him four times. Security footage showed Peterson sitting up from the ground after the first volley of shots with his arm extended. Officers say he was aiming a gun, but his family and attorney say the object could have been a cell phone, and reports say that he had been sending cell phone messages during the pursuit. During yesterday's press conference, Kevin Peterson Sr., the victim's father, said, quote, "You shot a man in the back while he was running away," and went on to say that the officers were not in any immediate danger. Peterson was the fourth person of color shot by police in Clark County since 2019. 4 months after his death, a Clark County sheriff's deputy shot another black man, 30-year-old Genoa Donald during a traffic stop. Donald died after a week on life support. In a statement Thursday, Clark County Sheriff Chuck Atkins called Peterson's death a tragedy. He said that the investigation into Peterson's death was handled by an outside agency and the shooting is under review by elected prosecutors in Pierce County, Washington. Peterson's death has also brought to light obvious racism in the Clark County courts. On March 9th, Clark County District Court Judge Darvin Zimmerman said on a hot microphone that Peterson was, quote, a black guy they were trying to make an angel out of, and that Peterson Sr., quote, woke up with dollar signs in his eyes. The comments drew immediate backlash, and Zimmerman has taken indefinite leave. During yesterday's press conference, lawyers for the Peterson family did not say who would be named in the lawsuit or how much the family plans to seek in damages. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Coming up next at 5:30, it's Counterspin. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sana Lee. Then at 7, The Struggle with Alyssa Pariah. Tonight, we'll see a mix of clouds and showers with temperatures dipping into the low to mid 40s. Tomorrow, we'll see a mostly rainy day with a possible late afternoon break and a high of about 50. On this day in 1918, Congress authorized the use of daylight savings time. Today's quote is from Benjamin Franklin, an early proponent of daylight savings time, who said this about Paris in 1784, quote, I say it is impossible that so sensible a people should have lived so long by the smoky, unwholesome, and enormously expensive light of candles. If they had really known that, they might have had as much pure light of the sun for nothing. A judge has ruled that the murder trial of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin will remain in the city. This is after his defense team requested that the trial prosecuting the man who killed George Floyd be moved to another county. They cited concerns that the jury could not be unbiased because of a $27 million civil settlement that had been reached between the city of Minneapolis and George Floyd's family. Now, city officials threaten to move in on George Floyd Square, an intersection that has been occupied by community advocates since Floyd's murder last May. For more, we go to Faven Gerezgiher with the Racial Reckoning Project.
This week, the city of Minneapolis announced plans to proceed with reopening George Floyd Square to vehicle traffic. The city had previously stated it would wait until the end of the Derek Chauvin trial. The intersection of 38th and Chicago was blocked off last summer and named George Floyd Square by community activists in the days following his death. While it's been nationally recognized as a space of communal gathering and healing, Mayor Fry now worries that the area is a hotspot for crime.
There have been individuals and groups located at this intersection that are not celebrating the life of George Floyd. Instead, they've caused violence. Neighborhoods have been terrorized.
Local residents and business owners have complained about the increase in violent crimes in the area. To address that, Police Chief Aaron Dondo introduced a law enforcement initiative, collaborating with the FBI and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, among others. Minneapolis resident and small business owner Samantha Priestinson, however, says the police are escalating the situation to justify reclaiming control of the square.
They are making it seem as if the already existing crime that's been there for well over two decades on Chicago and 38th, and quite frankly on Chicago, period, as if it suddenly arised once Mr. Floyd was murdered, which just isn't true.
Priestinson points out that the community has been promised police reform, yet is seeing increased police force being deployed. She's concerned that the new measures will destroy public trust and create further trauma for the community. Meanwhile, jury selection continues in the Derek Chauvin trial. As of Thursday evening, 12 jurors have been selected. 6 of them are people of color. For the Racial Reckoning Project, I'm Faymon Garazguihar.
Yesterday, the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals heard arguments on the suit brought by the Rosebud Sioux Tribe against the Indian Health Service. The suit claims that HIS healthcare is so poor, it violates treaty obligations. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Lawyers for the Rosebud Sioux Tribe and the U.S. Department of Justice argued Thursday before the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals. The Rosebud Sioux Tribe sued the Indian Health Service and the Department of Health and Human Services in 2016, claiming that IHS healthcare is so inadequate it violates treaty obligations. The tribe prevailed in part in a lower court and the agencies appealed. Victoria Wicks has this report.
Department of Justice Attorney John Koppel says the U.S. provides health services to the entire Native population, spending around $2 billion a year on more than 600 hospitals and clinics. But he says these services were created by Congress, not by the Fort Laramie Treaty of 1868.
The treaty simply required the United States to provide a single physician and a house for that physician, and not to exceed the cost of $3,000 and annual appropriations for that physician.
Koppel notes that the one physician was intended to serve the entire Great Sioux Nation. He says this lawsuit has been filed to create a permanent trust duty where one does not exist. The Rosebud Sioux Tribe is represented by Sioux Falls lawyer Tim Billion. He says Congress has affirmed its obligations under the Treaty of 1868 with laws that expand Indian health care.
The other party to the treaty, in the sense of arguing this lawsuit, is taking one position, but I would argue that the Congress of the United States has taken a much different position. And we've seen that in report after report after report, and study after study, and hearing after hearing, where Congress has reaffirmed its obligation to provide this health care.
Billion says a party to a treaty with the federal government should be able to get a declaration of its rights in federal court because there is no other place to make that argument. The 8th Circuit will issue an opinion at a later date. For National Native News, I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Two nurses in Canada's French-speaking province of Quebec have been fired. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, health authorities made the decision after the nurses were accused of making fun of an Indigenous patient at a clinic near Montreal.
The nurses are accused of referring to the patient as Joyce. That was a reference to Joyce Echaquan. In September, she filmed herself on her mobile phone while being mocked by healthcare workers at a Quebec hospital. She later died. In the more recent incident, the nurses also mocked a patient in the same city of Joliet, northeast of Montreal. Afterward, the regional health authority fired the nurses, saying they had breached the code of ethics of the nursing profession and the ethics and values of the health authority. A spokeswoman said discriminatory, racist, and intimidating behavior is unacceptable. Ghislain Picard is the Grand Chief of the Assembly of First Nations in Quebec. He calls it inhumane.
It's like adding insult to injury, and there's no place for that. But yet, you know, they allow themselves to do it. Not only is it an insult to the person, but it's very disrespectful of Joyce's memory.
Meanwhile, the Native Women's Association of Canada called the incident an outrage and demanded a full investigation into the conduct of the nurses. And it says it's shocking that healthcare professionals would behave in such a racist manner so soon after the condemnations that followed the release of the video by Joyce Echaquan. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
A ceremonial swearing-in was held Thursday for Secretary of the Interior Deb Haaland. With her family by her side, Haaland was sworn in by Vice President Kamala Harris. Haaland's attire captured attention on social media, with a video of her getting ready for the occasion, wrapping her moccasins, and a photo of her ribbon skirt. Haaland took the oath of office Tuesday during a small ceremony. Her first full day as secretary was Wednesday. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
In the wake of the deadly shootings in Atlanta, the House Judiciary Committee held a public hearing on Asian American discrimination for the first time in 30 years. With more on the story and others, here's Laura Rosborough Tellum with 2021 Talks.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I'm proud to announce that 58 days into our administration, we will have met my goal of administering 100 million shots to our fellow Americans.
President Joe Biden says today the U.S. will pass the 100 million shot mark for COVID vaccine distribution, weeks ahead of schedule. An increasing number of states are expanding eligibility, including Colorado, Ohio, Massachusetts, Michigan, Montana, and Utah. Meanwhile, the president is traveling today to Atlanta with Vice President Kamala Harris to meet with Asian American leaders in the wake of a shooter who killed at least 8 people, 6 who were Asian women. The House Judiciary Committee held the first hearing in 3 decades on discrimination against Asian Americans. Toward the beginning, Republican Representative Chip Roy of Texas said the victims of the Atlanta shooting deserve justice, and referenced lynching in his remarks.
There's old sayings in Texas about find all the rope in Texas and get a tall oak tree. We take justice very seriously.
Representative Roy was also concerned that the hearing focused on, quote, the policing of rhetoric in a free society, end quote. Democratic Representative Grace Meng of New York responded to Representative Roy's rhetoric.
Your president and your party and your colleagues can talk about issues with any other country that you want. But you don't have to do it by putting a bullseye on the back of Asian Americans across this country, on our grandparents, on our kids.
Republican Representative Michelle Steele of California and Democratic Representative Katie Porter have introduced a resolution condemning hate crimes committed against Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders. Meanwhile, Biden cabinet picks are moving. The Senate confirmed William J. Burns as CIA director and Javier Becerra as Secretary of Health and Human Services. Becerra, the former California State Attorney General, will be the first Latino to head HHS. Biden nominated former Florida Senator Bill Nelson to lead NASA. That awaits Senate confirmation. The administration plans to send millions of doses of the AstraZeneca COVID vaccine to Mexico and Canada, the White House said yesterday. The vaccine hasn't been authorized by American regulators yet. Kate, age 20, from Mexico, asked not to use her last name. She said her grandfather recently died from COVID, and she's frustrated many there don't wear masks.
A lot of people, they say, oh, it's almost over. The vaccine is coming. We don't really have to wear masks. But they don't think about other people, like my grandpa. My grandpa was really old.
Conservatives continue to criticize Biden's handling of the southern border. The administration says there are now 14,000 migrant children in U.S. custody, but refuses to call the situation a crisis. Finally, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki says Biden does not regret calling Putin a killer for ordering the poisoning of Kremlin critics. Putin yesterday responded that it takes one to know one. For Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Laura Rosborough Tellum. Thanks for listening.
In November, voters in Montana passed Initiative 190, which legalized marijuana usage for adults. Nearly half of the tax revenue is designated for conservation efforts. For more on the story, here's Eric Tegedoff with the Public News Service.
A draft bill for Montana's recreational cannabis program is out. Conservation and outdoors advocates are hoping to secure more funds for public lands as lawmakers consider it further. In November, 57% of Montanans approved Initiative 190, legalizing recreational marijuana for adults and directing nearly half of the tax revenue collected to public lands. On Wednesday, groups rallied at the Capitol to call attention to the difference between the initiative and this bill. Whitney Taney, head of Montana Conservation Voters, says the bill does provide some revenue to conservation.
There is trails and parks funding that can help with some maintenance issues, in addition to non-game species funding, and that is great. But for us, this is a starting point.
The draft caps funding at $650,000 for each of the trails, parks, and non-game species programs. Taney says it doesn't mention the Habitat Montana program, which helps to secure public access through acquisitions and easements. In the draft, funds are first directed to drug addiction treatment and then largely funneled to the state general revenue. Ann Joliffe and her husband own Full Curl Taxidermy in Montana City. She was at the Capitol on Wednesday. She enjoys outdoor sports and wants to make sure her 3 daughters get to enjoy public lands.
It's important for Montana's future, for all of us, for our kids, for our families.
for our mental and physical well-being to have that public access.
Tani says the funding, especially for pieces such as acquisitions and easements for access, are important because most of the money currently comes from hunters and anglers.
So we want to be able to diversify that funding because, frankly, we all are part of that. We're all users, and so this is one way to kind of equalize that share.
For Public News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, March 19th, 2021. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast is Althea Billings, Ray Bodwell, Antonia Gonzalez, Laura Rosborough-Tellum, and Eric Tegedoff. The producer is Ray Bodwell, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Mary Sherman, Antonia Gonzalez, and Eric Tegedoff. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Nat Moon. Stay safe, wear a mask.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson.